This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, this is the employee assembly meeting for Wednesday, June 2nd, 2010. It is 12:17 p.m. We're in 316 Day Hall. This is Jason Seymour, the outgoing chair for the employee assembly. This is a sort of a hybrid meeting of a presentation today with Alan Bishop and Mary George Opperman from Human Resources and an organizational meeting of the new term and electing new officers, and may squeak in the approval of the last meeting's minutes. I'm just going to do the roll call right now. David Brooks.
Here.
Catherine Cauldron.
Here.
Trisha Tempa Dunktop. Curtis Ferguson.
Present.
Tanya Grove.
Here.
Linda Kroll Hall.
Here.
Leslie Meyerhoff.
Meyerhoff.
Leslie Morris. Gemma Osborne is not able to make it today due to a family emergency. Seeley Phillips. Jason Seymour present. Gary Stewart.
Here.
Okay. And we also have Beth McKinney, our employee elected trustee. Ben Hevener from GPSA. And we have Ari Epstein and Amy from the Office of Assemblies. Great, thank you. Well, while we're waiting for Mary to arrive, let's go ahead and take a look at the minutes from the last meeting and see if we can approve those. Does anyone need a copy to review? I only have two copies here.
So I'm going to say that if you were to approve the last meeting,
I would not.
In your heart.
Okay.
He was in spirit.
Yeah. That's probably.
Did you get that?
Yeah.
Curtis was not at the last meeting.
I saw that.
Seeley has just joined us.
Jason, I walked at the last meeting, by the way, but I don't think that one.
So, Amy, you have all three of those?
I don't believe Ned was there.
No, Ned was not.
Yeah.
Trisha was there, though. Mm-hmm.
He was at the end of the con. I know because I still have a copy
of
the answer. Beth was not at the last meeting. Given the corrections to the call to order section, is there a motion? Is there a second? All those in favor of approving the minutes as amended in the call to order, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstain? Thank you. Minutes passed. Okay, so you've all received a copy of the employee assembly membership sheet. This will be updated throughout the year as needed. It's passed around. Did it get stopped somewhere?
I think we will, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Here it is.
And so, and then the meeting schedule as well. So I'd like to call your attention to June 16th, which is the third Wednesday of the month, is going to be the next EA meeting. And there are no meetings in July. And then there's also the retreat that is June
21st.
21st.
So we may want to talk about not having a June 16th meeting because we're going to have the retreat a couple of days later.
So. Okay.
And I will not be here on the 16th.
Yeah, we have notice and response.
So it's kind of that right.
Yeah, there will be a couple of us who will be here.
Hello, Mary. Okay, so Mary, Allie, ready to join us? If we're ready for you.
We are.
So today is an open discussion with Alan Bishop and Mary George Opperman, Vice President of Human Resources, to share what the layoff process is, how it works, what does a person go through when engaging with HR on that process, and kind of just to let us all know and help be liaisons for that information if we should encounter that out in the field as our work as employee assembly members. So, turn it over to you.
Okay. So where do you want us to start with this? Do you want to ask questions, or how do you want to do this?
Why don't you just give a background of how the layoff process starts in its infancy and how it reaches up to your office and then the employee notification, and I think we can go from there.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if you start maybe on a little bit more of a positive note, and at the trustee meetings, the president urged me to remind the employees that even though there are layoff things, have not resulted in as many layoffs as we'd hoped for because things are looking up we're a little bit ahead of ourselves with the cost savings and the other initiatives that the university has taken. And so he put that in his letter, but I don't know if Mary, you want to say anything about that.
Yeah, we did a retrospective action of the, it really should count those months, right, from November of 08 till now, and we made most of our cutbacks from actions other than layoffs, the vast majority actually from actions other than layoffs, primarily due to the staff retirement incentive program. So we're that looks like the way we're going to finalize our reductions is through actions either leaving jobs open as people vacate them, and that includes leaving open most of the positions that we vacate in the staff retirement incentive. But we have had we always have layoffs, and we continue to have them. And as I said at the employee assembly, it's difficult for me to celebrate the fact that we've had a lower number than we thought because we still laid people off. And that's hard for me to hard for me when we've laid off anyone. So. So the way the process works is that when a department needs to reduce its force involuntarily, it looks at the work it has left to do and the people that it has in its workforce capable of doing that work. And it makes the determination of who it is going to select to do the available remaining work, and proposes individuals for layoff. It then, the department, the decision makers in the department then put together a proposal for layoff. That proposal then has to be approved. It has to be approved by Human Resources and by the general counsel's office, and we look for, and we, our approval process was reviewed by the Board of Trustees Audit Committee. So we have a process by which we look at who is being suggested for layoff, and we determine that there's no adverse impact. No one is being treated unfairly, either legally or by any other measure. That's, in other words, the determination of who was selected is fair. And that the people that were left to do their remaining work were selected by fair criteria. So Alan's office is the office that makes the Alan Mittman's office is the office, so that's the Office of Staff and Labor Relations, is the office that convenes the parties that reviews that proposal. And if there are any questions, then both the General Counsel's Office, actually, and the Office of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion, and Alan Mittman's office have the right to stop any proposed layout.
Based on what?
Any perception of unfairness or bias. And any question about whether or not the layoff proposal is, you know, why are the people that have been selected, you know, has that been fully thought through? Are the justifications, you know, fully vetted? Are they thought through? It's not up to us to say, you know, pick this person over that person. Those are management decisions. But has the criteria been?
Insurance and policy is one piece of the defensibility that Mary's talking about. So, while we wouldn't say why this one over that one from a decision-making perspective, we may have a question to have somebody provide additional information if that information that's been submitted already doesn't provide appropriate clarity around why that decision was reached. Situations where performance may be the criteria being used. Where's the documentation that shows that performance really is what you state in this? So looking for information to support the decision. One of the things that the reviewers are doing more and more now is actually participating and engaging in conversations before the proposal gets submitted to make sure that the conversation and the decisions being made encompass everything that's really going to be part of that decision.
Has the work that is remaining been thought through? Can that work actually get done with the remaining available work? So then once the decisions are made, then the local human resource office is responsible for the communication of the decision, making sure that the letters are written appropriately, the communication is made to the individual parties, and that the case manager is assigned, and then the services are made available.
And one other thing I think I'd point out is Mary alluded to it, and Beth as well. There are a number of cases that are approved that don't move forward. So the reviewers review the case and make a decision that, yes, we can support the direction, but the unit either has money to be reinstated, somebody else leaves, which removes the need to have that person be laid off. The person may find another job before they were ever notified, or may find a job after they were notified. So there's all sorts of things. We have, you know, X number of people have been laid off, but there's all sorts of other activity that were in the pipeline but didn't have to move forward because of other actions, you know, through the efforts of people around campus to try to, you know, facilitate connections. So I just want to make that point. So, Mary, I think you left it as a notification point. So there is a conversation. Every individual getting laid off would have a written confirmation of the layoff. They receive a layoff packet that has some relevant information. There's a certain dealing with layoffs and trying to help make sure they have the resources at their fingertips.
And I go through the notice periods on soft money and then on regular.
Okay. Fortunately, I brought the policy. Pretty straight on. So one of the questions that the group reported in advance is what's the required notice period? And generally the minimum requirement is 30 days notice for staff, regular position. Typically we see periods that are more than that. Most people try to get more, but there are some situations where they can't get more. Very rarely, I would say, do we have a situation where the notice is delivered and the person is not allowed to work out through the notice period. It's a very infrequent occurrence. So I'll talk more about notice period in a second, just following my train of thought. As they're informed of the layoff, the next step would be to try to communicate with the outplacement department that we have, which is voice group. Consultants have been doing a very good job from what we hear, working with individuals that have been laid off. So the first step there is a conversation between the HR, the local HR office, and the voice group consultants assigned to make sure we're all on the same page. Has the individual been notified? What's the preferred way of communication? Should we anticipate any special needs or situations that need to be aware of before we engage? And then the voice group will reach out to the individual. And our goal is to have that done within 48 hours of the notification, so that they can make the initial connection, talk about services that are available, and the individual has to decide whether or not they want to engage those services. So we try to be as flexible as we can with those individuals. You don't have to engage right now. If you want to put it on hold for a period of time and come back to us, you can do that. But essentially, people get 6 months worth of case management services through the West. It's an outplacement services, and that's how we provide that case management services. And there's a full range of services that are delivered to help people deal with the decision, the information that they just heard, in some cases the shock of that, help people think through what the impact of that decision may be, not only on me personally, but how do I talk to my family, how do I talk to my friends, what am I comfortable saying, how do I get myself through this period of time where I'm supposed to be working but my head's not there. So there's a lot of conversations and a lot of back and forth between the wage group consultant and the HR office if there are situations that we need to be aware of. And then we tend to offer a group workshop to help lay out some pretty basic information that we want to be aware of, walking through that, provides an opportunity to make connections with other individuals, and then they get into one-on-one dialogue with consultants that are available to them. And many people think that they're ready to jump right into job search. In fact, there's a lot of work that needs to go on to help people prepare to get back into job search. Some people haven't done job search in a long time, some people have. There's a lot of work to help them prepare for that, whether it's a resume or cover letter, or trying to narrow in on what kind of jobs we're going to focus our energy around, both here at Cornell and external to the organization, because obviously Cornell cannot re-employ it, but we don't have the opportunities that we have, so that we used to have. So there's lots of effort there. Thank you. So I'll stop there. Any questions about anything I just said?
Just in a question about the notice period. So, we have to be in the 30 days, but we try to give more. What happens to the person who's laid off and says, I can't work it out, I can't work till the end?
Yep.
Is there something that we can do for them?
So I would say that's a situation we look at case by case. If the reason why the individual can't work through the notice period is because the news is just so difficult to deal with and I can't get myself around and I'm coming in, I'm not doing the work that really needs to get done. And we want to look at that differently than the person who is really just coming in. I want to do a good job, but I can't do it, versus the person who's really trying to sabotage them. All right, so there's some situations, again, unfortunately, I think many of these where they're really turned into misconduct, which is treated differently than the situation where I want to be here, I want to do my job, but I just can't.
A lot of times, just a couple of days away will help that situation, and then they really are better off coming in after a few days of just getting through the initial shock. They're actually better coming in and working the rest of the notice period. Maybe they can't work every single day, but they're better to keep busy and keep active. It helps with the job search.
So the notification, you mentioned the letter was prepared. Is that letter mailed or is it delivered in person?
It's delivered in person, so usually what happens is what our expectation is, but this face-to-face conversation, HR, the supervisor, and the business.
Okay, so both are involved,
and
HR
during,
and
yeah. And during that conversation, verbalize it and then hand the letter.
Because most people can't hear anything after the first
thing
that's said. So the letter is given because then they take it back, and then that's something for the family to be able to read later, because it gives all of the benefits.
Yeah.
And most folks, are they're told that they've lost their job, they don't hear anything. It's sort of like when you go to the doctor and get bad news. So it's something that they can take and then carry around with them, and a family member can read it later. They can go over it with the outplacement counselor. There's a lot, Cornell gives a lot of benefits, and most people just can't integrate that information.
Right.
So it's in written form.
And just to be clear, there's one letter that communicates the decision, then there's another letter that they get that has, you know, personalized about benefits that Cornell has, and what you, you know, said something here about this check mark next to this means something. So one of the questions you guys had asked is, what are the benefits? There are numerous benefits that individuals on layoffs have continued to take with them during the layoff period. I talked about case management. Services being 6 months, layoff period is a full year. So during that full year, there are benefits that, that stay attached to them. Some of them, like auto insurance, people were paying for auto insurance, and they would continue that. They'd have to pay it differently than maybe they're paying health benefits. They would continue to pay the employee share, $1,000 spent, things like that. Retirement opportunities, no contributions at that point. There's certain educational benefits that continue, things like that. So there's specific questions about benefits I have, like in Daniel's letter, I can take a look at that and try to be more specific on that.
There's severance benefits.
So we talked about outplacement, the other two other pieces of what we think laid off individuals received, the job placement assistance. The outplacement support, the severance package, and then the benefits that goes along with that. Severance really is intended to provide that financial assistance to get them through initially.
How can benefits be different from one person to another? I mean, if you think about the statutory endowed, exempt, non-exempt, is that what we're talking about? Those classifications have different.
Which benefits they have and which ones they choose to continue. Not everyone chooses to continue all their benefits. And also which benefits return to them when they come back and how they return. It's difficult and really unwise to try to go through benefits in a macro way. The best thing for someone to do is go talk to their benefits counselor. And so so one of the things that we strongly advise is that individuals go see and sit down with the benefits counselor at the right time after the shock has worn off, so that they and take someone with them and go through their benefits one by one by one, so that they understand them. Maybe even go back another time to talk about when they, you know, what benefits they have and how they should convert each benefit, because they're fairly complex. And it also depends on their age, so, you know, what happens to their retirement benefits and what choices they have with the retirement benefits. They're some of the most important decisions they'll make. And, you know, then the other thing is that in an economic situation like the one we have right now, this is a very different circumstance than the circumstance we had even 5 years ago. When we laid off individuals 5 years ago, the case manager was somebody from Human Resources, because most layoffs got their job back for now. Now, we don't even have case managers in HR because we don't really have that many jobs left at Cornell. As we just told you, part of the way that we have reduced the number of layoffs is that we've held almost every single job open. The downside of that is that we haven't been able to place as many layoffs as we had hoped we would be able to. Now we have avoided layoffs by moving people around. But when we've had to go ahead and lay off, it's been much harder for us to place as many of our layoffs as we had been able to in the past. And so that has an impact on benefits, right? So, you know, things are just very, very different for everybody than they used to be. And that has an impact on their benefits.
And we do still try to have an HR contact with people, not a case manager, but just like you or I would have questions that maybe we want to ask somebody that we've worked with from an HR perspective. We still try to have somebody with HR contact, so if I were to be laid off, I would know that I could ask Mary a question. You know, who do I talk to in the benefits office? Where do I go to get information about wellness, whatever it is? And I also have my health placement partner with the wife. We try to make sure we're connecting them to the right resources.
Mary, I have a question. When you talked about job openings before, when jobs are open, they're open internally first, correct, and then they go external, potentially. For the jobs that go externally, do the hiring departments have to argue for them to go external if there's viable candidates internally?
No, not really. I mean, we had 147 positions opened all of last year. Now, remember, our normal set of openings, we have 1,000 openings. So you're talking about a tenth of the number of normal openings. Of the 147 jobs that we had open, 21% of those were on general purpose funding. 21%. The rest of those were essentially funded positions on sponsored funds. So every single job we post, we are posting because we need it posted. Either we got sponsored funds or it was a designated fund, or it was an essential funded position that we needed to have funded. So the first thing we do with those is we look at the pool of open, the layoff candidates we have, or the people on layoff status, and try to fill it that way.
I'm just thinking in terms of other people, like I'm not in layoff status, but say I was applying for a job elsewhere, would I have more consideration before they opened it externally?
You have priority for consideration from the standpoint as a layoff. You have priority for consideration for interview but you don't have priority for hire unless you're more qualified.
Absolutely. I'm just curious about these.
But remember what I just said. Only 21% of those are on GP funding. That means every other one of those positions, so almost 80% of those are sponsored fund jobs. We only have a certain amount of time to get them filled. Otherwise, we're going to lose our funding. So we can't hold a researcher up from those. The money, the clock is ticking on those jobs. So we've got to get them filled. We have so few positions, and most of those jobs are very, very, very specialized positions. So I have to tell you, we just are not seeing behaviors across our hiring supervisors where we've had to wrap knuckles. They are trying their hardest to place our people who are out of work.
Each of the colleges under their leadership has a process in place that requires careful review of every opening that's coming along before decisions made to move it forward. And I just want to make sure we're clear. When you talk about positions that have to be advertised internally before they go external, certainly any positions on GP funds, that's true. But there are some criteria that allow to go internal and external at the same time. It's not just one thing. One of them is the timing of that. So there's some of that.
I think my question is more specifically about the person. So say, I'm going to use myself as an example. I applied for a job. I haven't lost my job in that layoff status. But if I applied for this other job that potentially is open and more secure, if there's no one in the layoff pool that's appropriate for it and I'm an appropriate internal candidate, there could be a move there that would let my job be reviewed as one that could be done away with. So that we're still keeping it internal. Mm-hmm. So that was why that
No, you don't have, as an internal candidate, you don't have priority over an external candidate. Unless that, if you're more qualified than an external candidate, you would get the job on your merits. But you wouldn't get the job simply because you were an internal.
And absolutely, I'm just curious about qualifications.
Yeah. But certainly, in the situation you described, if a unit knew that there was going to be some changes to an organization and they had a group of people who were going to be impacted by that, can they know, and they did not communicate that yet, but my HR colleague in another college has openings, I would reach out and have those conversations and we can make the connection. That's a lot of what happens when we're trying to help people support them as much as we can. So definitely there's no priority from an internal perspective. We have lots of internal applicants.
Right.
But we do want to try to support internal movement because in some cases, especially as we talked about, after careful review of position establishment, it could be more secure than the one you're sitting in. But that's not anything we can really go back to you and say,
yeah,
your job
does not so secure. Yeah, absolutely.
But with that said, aren't there certain kinds of positions that do favor certain qualifications? For example, is it a position that requires someone of minority status, or is, I don't know if it still exists at Cornell, but people who might be veterans, does that kind of give them, at one time you had Quest, which you don't have anymore, but aren't there actual cases where an applicant is given a favored status despite which, even though they may have qualifications that are slightly less favorable for a particular, in terms of
positions or not, we don't have targets on positions based on somebody's attributes.
It all goes back to what Mary said about the best qualified person. Pool of 10 people and the best qualified person in there, that's who we're going to want to focus our attention on.
The university is not nearly as diverse as it should be,
mm-hmm.
based on the diversity of the country or even the local community. So we should definitely be supported by our workforce. But we don't target a job and say mm-hmm. this job should have somebody diverse in it. And we should be trying to be more diverse as a workforce, especially given our student workforce.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't say we're going to take this job and make it diverse.
Going off your statement about diversity, is there any plans or conversations about with the layoffs and the freeze? How are you going to plan to make the employee continue to be? Just the number of diversity, even more.
Well, increasing diversity, given the fact that we're not doing much hiring, is a difficult situation. There's no doubt about it. When you only have 147 opportunities to hire and one on the band of staff, which is what we had, that's a challenge. We're not a particularly diverse workforce to start with, and only 147 opportunities is not very much in the workforce population of 6,000. That's not great. So. We want to take every opportunity and hire carefully. And that's particularly difficult because when you're down, the workforce is down by 7%. So everybody feels it, right? They're doing more work with that work. We haven't reduced the workload. So the one thing we know is that people are feeling really stressed. So when those jobs open up, there's a great deal of pressure to fill them really fast. And so we're saying, geez, you know, we'd really like those searches to be thoughtful and full-bodied and really look at the work, you know, the composite of that candidate pool. And we're getting a lot of pressure about that. Because if you're not careful, you're not necessarily getting a diverse population of the candidate pool. And if you hurry, the likelihood is that the candidate pool won't be diverse. So we're getting a little pushback on that.
So we're almost out of time. Does anyone have any mm-hmm. last pressing questions you were waiting on?
I'm wondering why is this job little existing on campus and how is it helping you? Is it due to the budget?
The job what?
Why is this job layoff existing on campus? And is it because due to the budget or? And the problem, you know, how is it affecting to the whole community? And I would like to know how did you solve the problem?
The layoff?
Affecting. The individuals as well as to the community, whole community.
The layoffs in general, is that the question? How are the layoffs affecting the community?
Right. And how do you solve, you know, I don't see it's helping much to the individuals who get laid off.
Yeah, it is definitely because of the financial situation. The layoffs that we've had sort of chronically through the years have mostly been because we've lost grants that's been our primary reason for laughs in the past. But the laughs that we've had over the last, since November of 2008, not that I know that by heart or anything, have all been because of the financial situation that the university found itself in. And it has affected the community. It's affected morale. It's got people very nervous. And I think the way to move past it is for the university to get the budget in alignment and tell the community when we're done. And I think until the university does that, and I think we're pretty close, I think people will not relax. You know, I think we need to be able to say, you know, we're essentially done, and I think we're getting there. I think the university needs to say, you know, we're essentially done. And while I don't think we're going to be in a period of growth for a very long period of time, I think the university needs to be able to say, you know, for the most part, we're essentially done. And now we need to align the workforce to the work to the workforce. So people can recognize that while I think we're all going to be working harder, that we're not all looking over our shoulders waiting for the next whatever to drop. Because I think people need to stop being worried. So I think people are need to have a sense of security.
But then if that's the issue, I feel that it should be keep it to a minimum than to be bringing this issue up, you know, to make more stress to the community.
I think that's right. I think you're absolutely right. I think it needs to be, I think that's what David was asking Beth to make clear, that we actually did very, very well in terms of a community that was very nervous. The layoffs were actually quite minimal compared to what we thought they were going to be. But we worried a lot about them because we're a very small community. And so we didn't know how many we thought we were going to have. And people are very nervous because the university hasn't come out and said we're essentially done. And people can, now we need to get the work fit into the box of the size we are. I mean, down over 700 jobs in a community our size is a lot of jobs. No matter how you lost them, that's a lot of jobs. And I think you're right. We need to be, people need to know when we're done and be able to start feeling a little less stressed.
You mentioned when you were at the last meeting that you would be able to talk about numbers. And it sounds like there are numbers out there now. And for the latest round, what are we looking at in terms of how many people have been notified?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I don't have perfect numbers, but I think it looks like about from the beginning of this to the end, there's just under 175 people have been laid off from the beginning, which was about November of 2008 till now. We're not done. The biggest unknown for me, honestly, is the state. It's just very unnerving to have that four of our in a situation where we just don't know. And we don't have all of the Bain changes completely finished. So, you know, there may be some more of that. We have a lot of positions that have been held open, though. And that has made a big difference, you know, because that gives you that flexibility to use those open positions. But we're down about 700 positions. So when you think about that, I mean, that's of a total of 700 positions, over 700 positions, you know, that's a percentage of a whole that's not that, not as many as I had worried. But again, you know, at the risk of sounding like, I'm sorry if I don't sound, if you're one of those 170, that's devastating to you and your family. So, you know, at the risk, I just can't say that's good news. I better news than I had originally worried about. You know, there was a time when I thought that the number was going to be much more towards the 700 side. We've struggled to pay for that SRI, honestly. It's been a bill that has been difficult to pay for. I'm so glad I did it. It's made a big difference in terms of mitigating the layoff. Big difference.
Mary.
Yeah, we're a little over time.
I thought we had till 1.
Well, you mentioned
yes. Can you ask it real quick?
Yeah, and the severance package states like 1 week of pay per year of service. Is there qualifications for that, or is that for anybody who gets laid off?
After
a year. Right after your year.
Okay.
1 week of pay per year of service up to 24 weeks. And then there's some variation depending on sponsorship funding. So the terms around how the money comes in. So there's some options on the sponsored fund that would allow us to give additional notice, for example, or combination notice and severance to equate to the same.
Okay.
We do it differently with sponsored funds because it's not on sponsored funds. You can't. They don't have the ability to use sponsored money in the same way for severance. So they use a different notice. They elongate the notice period, which is different if you look at the policy.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mary and Alan, very much. Very informative. All right. We need to cram in our organizational meeting of the election of new officers for the 2010 and 11 session. Why don't we get started to get set up so we have limited fluids here and pizza, but let's maybe see if we can go through a round of nominations, and maybe we'll take a quick break to grab a piece of pizza.
Jason, I want to make sure everyone around the table knows who everybody is. I don't know if everyone's met each other.
And I can serve pizza. How about that?
Who they are and where they work, I think it'd be a nice thing.
Okay. I'm Jason Seymour, the outgoing chair of the Employee Assembly. I work in computing and information science.
I'm Catherine Colden. I work at the Cornell Experimentation and on Ithaca campus. I'm a new member.
Linda Cole Powell. I work in the Office of Human Resources and Workforce Parts and Inclusion in the work-life services area.
I'm Kemper Tonto, and I'm with Kemper Flight.
Hi, I'm Leslie Morris. I work in the Cornell Sports Center for the Performing Arts, which is also the Department of Film and Dance.
And I'm a second year returning member.
Leslie Meyerhoff, also in Kansas Life, and I'm a new member.
I'm Gary Stewart. I work in government community relations, and I'm supposed to be my third year.
I'm Krova Grove. I'm general manager at the Schwartz Campus Center. I'm Peter Fennedam.
Hello, I'm Curtis Ferguson II. I'm the assistant director of multicultural programs at the School of Hotel Administration, and I'm a new member.
Trisha Benesavich. I work for CIC for video collaboration services, and I'm a new member.
My name is David Brooks. I work for the Architecture, Arts, and Planning in their IT department.
I'm Celia Phillips, and I'm also Architecture, Arts, Planning. I work in the Architecture, Arts, Planning Career Services Office, and I'm going into my second year. Okay.
And I'm Beth McKinney. I am an employee elected trustee, and I'm entering my third year out of a four-year term. Is that right?
That's
oh my gosh!
Yeah. It's not that
I'm
non-voting member.
Yep. I'm non-voting, but I try to be to as many meetings as I can make.
And we appreciate it. You bring a lot of good information. Ben.
I'm Ben Hefner. I'm a liaison from the Graduate Professional Students Association. So I sit at the table sometimes or the back sometimes.
There's two chairs up here now.
Amy O'Donnell from the Assembly's office.
So I'm going to skipped the responsibilities of the positions. The new members had covered that in their orientation. All new members were present. All existing members should probably know what our positions do at this point. So I'd like to call or open the floor to nominations for chair, and you can self-nominate yourself as well. So are there any nominations for the position of chair?
Can you just point?
All at once?
Okay.
Tanya Grove, you've been nominated. Do you accept? Any other nominations for chair? Tanya Grove twice. All right, well, we'll be making you. We will come back. We'll just go to vice chair. Any nominations for vice chair, executive vice chair?
I thought the way this protocol was supposed to work is that we elected a chair and then the chair took over the rest of the meeting.
Oh,
maybe.
Is that how?
Yeah, can you act?
Is it? Yeah. Okay.
So that's the first order of business is, and my last order of business is probably said.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. It's elected chair. presuming it's going to be Tanya, that Tanya runs the rest of the meeting.
Sounds good to me.
Doesn't sound good to me.
So you call for a vote.
Are there any further nominations for chair?
I'd nominate Leon when he's not here.
I think we should.
Nominate Leon.
We'll send him an email.
Right, let's keep ordering in.
So we can go to a private or a secret ballot, or it could be a motion to elect by acclamation. Am I correct?
Correct.
I motion.
Second.
So there's a motion and a second on the table to elect Tanya Grove to chair by acclamation.
For
chair, meaning that the only candidate for the position. Is there any objection? All those in favor of moving to the election by acclamation, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Now, all those in favor of electing Tanya, our new chair, say aye.
Aye.
She abstains. Congratulations, Tanya. I turn you over to the agenda. Oh, yeah.
You get to shut the recorder off, too.
All right. Thank you. And what happened to the gavel?
I don't know.
You're going to need a gavel. All right. So, nominations for vice chair.
I'd like to nominate Leslie Sadler Meyerhoff. And, you know, if there are more nominations, I'll just say why I'm nominating Leslie. Leslie's been here since the late 90s. She's worked extensively with both faculty, staff, and students, which I think we need here on the EA. I know her in a bunch of different circles, and one of the things I admire about her is that when she says she's going to do something, it gets done. She's really organized. And she's got a great heart. She's been involved in a lot of stuff, ranging from United Way to Women's Women for Hospice Care. And then back in the day, she was also on the EA Communications Committee, so I think she just brings some good skills.
Any other nominations for Vice Chair? So do we continue to call for nominations to the other position? I'm looking to you, Mr. Still Parliamentarian. So
we vote for Parliamentarian next time. No, we can follow the same protocol.
Okay.
And no other nominations.
But she accepts the nomination.
You accept the nomination. Thank you. She accepts. So all in favor of voting Leslie Fadler Meyerhoff by acclamation? Right?
Aye.
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 Aye. Is that it?
Now is the motion to vote on the
right. All right. All
now the official one.
Okay. So to officially vote, all those in favor of Leslie as vice chair? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? All right. Congratulations. All right. Vice chair of internal operations, nomination.
Is everyone sure what that job entails?
Yeah, we should
briefly describe it.
Sure. The vice chair of internal operations in the executive committee, their main responsibilities are appointing people to committees, our committees, the UA, other committees across campus that we're involved in, and then also coordinating the EA election.
So what's the
EA election?
Oh, the election. Okay.
Annually. Those are pretty much the primary responsibilities. So it's a little busy at the startup of the EA session, just getting the committee staffed, and then at election time it's a little busier. But other than that, it's a fairly low key position.
Go ahead.
Are you interested, Celia?
No.
Well, the election. I thought we were supposed to put all the nominations for all the positions out on the table at the very beginning, so I want to put this out there that Gemma has called me and expressed interest in being the vice chair for finance. She said she wouldn't be able to attend a lot of the executive committee meetings, but she could by phone when possible. And if not that position, she'd be interested in any position on the executive committee. So I'm going to throw that out there so that she should also be in the ring for internal operations. Well,
so then let's talk about the other positions. So is anyone else interested in finance? The finance chair position. I'm just going to start nominating people.
Anybody can be nominated. You don't have to be in your second year.
No, five.
Right.
I would actually be interested in either one of those. I think they
good.
So depending on the other.
Do you have a preference for either one and interest?
I did for finance, but if there aren't any changes for internal.
Can I nominate you for internal?
Second.
Anyone else interested in internal operations? Or how about parliamentarian? Mm-hmm.
Tough job.
Well, it could be, though, actually.
Yeah, next year.
Wow, this is fine.
Remind everybody that these are also just one-year positions. They're not, so if you're new, this is not a two-year term commitment for the officer position. One.
No. I respectfully disagree.
Trisha?
I was going to get some Diet Coke. I might call Linda Rachel Bradley.
Oh, I'm on so many committees right now. I can't
possibly handle another one.
Can we keep the same person?
Thank you.
He doesn't want it.
He doesn't. He's not interested in running again.
Did somebody nominate him and say that?
Well, someone tried to nominate him and he said no, thank you. So, David? Mm-hmm. Steely?
I wish I could.
All right, so maybe we don't have a parliamentarian. Ari, what happens with that? What if we have no one? What if nobody wants?
Then all of our meetings can run a ruckus.
You just stay locked in a room?
Like you?
No.
So what happens if we don't? What happens if we don't?
What is the
interest?
What's
the
Or is Jason, you're not interested? That's a simple one.
All right.
Run.
Look at them. So much more cool. Like this on the
ground. All right. Right. Now it's just trying to go down the route.
All right.
Can we just do a flight bolt since there's only one?
Yes. So, call. See, you should put one for the phone.
We'll get it next year.
All right. Well, I won't be here soon. So, for VP of Internal Operations, we have Catherine Coldren. We accept that nomination. And for finance, we have Gemma Osborne. And for parliamentarian, we have Jason Seymour. Can we vote by acclamation to make a slate vote for those three candidates?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
And then a vote for Catherine Coldren for VP of Internal Operations.
We're doing a whole slate.
Yes. Gemma Osborne for Finance and Jason Seymour for Parliamentarian. All in favor?
Aye.
Look at that. We have 15 minutes to spare. What can we do?
There's some soda now and more pizza so we can...
Yes.
So now about the committees, we have going to elect the application and all of those are dealt with.
Let me ask our new VP of Internal Operations.
Okay.
What happened?
When did those get decided?
Last time we decided them at the retreat, I think.
Okay.
But if people are interested in committees, in sharing committees, they should let Catherine know. And then we'll figure that out at the retreat. But one other thing that we should talk about is the meeting on the 16th. There, Celie won't be there. I won't be there. Linda won't be there. Pemba, I don't think, will be there.
I won't be there.
Curtis won't be there. So in lieu of having a meeting on the 16th, since we are having our retreat on the 21st, can we cancel our meeting for the 16th?
I
don't hurt him, man.
How these folks, like some of you, won't be there on the 16th, because I think it's interesting.
Sure. A group of us are going to go through a facilitator training for the Noticing Response Program. With everything that was happening on campus, Linda's very involved in that. And this idea came out of people who would be willing to learn how to facilitate the program and then be able to go across campus and present it to other staff. Because Gannett obviously can't do it all. So a couple of us are going through that training and we'll start to be facilitators. And if anyone else is interested in doing something like that, they should talk to Linda because there will be future training sessions. And I think it's a great way for the EA to be involved in stuff across campus. It's a way we can help out, and it's a way that we can get people to know who we are and what we do as well.
The wellness program can support that, so we can have a wellness notice and response that people can decide to go to in addition to departments doing it within their department.
Wonderful. This should just be something we do forever. This isn't like a one-year deal. I mean, and the focus has been so much on the students, but the staff, you know, just to be able to go up to a staff member and just say, are you doing okay? You know, what's going on? And can I help or whatever? And it's a delicate work, and a lot of us feel funny about it. I mean, the interventions I've done with Tanya over the years, it's a scary amount, really. But,
they waited to say that until after she was nominated.
She's crazy, you guys.
She's crazy. She's all going to be online.
They do emphasize confidentiality and notice and response, right?
Right.
Oh, that's good.
And then the retreat's the 21st, right? Does everyone know that?
The retreat's on the 21st. It is going to be from 9 to 3, and it's going to be the Captain Center.
Does everybody know where that is?
The what center?
The Carroll TACCON. Sorry, I have a mouthful of pizza. It's in Balch Hall on North Campus. It's
Balch.
It's essentially across the hall from across the street from Helen Newman. So if you're driving from Central Campus to North Campus, Balch is the first big stone building that you see. And if you take the first right, the TACCON Center will be on that side of the building. You'll pass
a loading dock, and then the center is the next entrance to the building. So it's before you get to Helen Newman. But there's a parking lot with meters across the street from Balch. It's near A Lot. There's also parking in Appel. Those are probably the closest places to park.
And the meter?
I said the meters at Alumni House, too.
So if you cross, if you go on that road that takes you to Helen Newman, that road, so it's
on the left.
It's on the left.
The first building on the left on that road.
Okay.
Yep. And there's a sign out front that says Carroll Tactile Center.
Okay.
And we already have a couple of things in the works planned for the retreat. So we will, we're going to do a little video, which Derek can talk about.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're gonna go around, and each of us is going to say, and we're going to do this for Cornell Cast, and we'll have a crew come in, and each of us is going to say, hi, I'm Gary Stewart. I work in the Office of Government Community Relations at Cornell. And I'm interested in issues related to sustainability and diversity, and I'm really on the EA because I want to work for folks who don't have a voice on campus. So like 50 seconds, and we'll just go around, and then we'll have this really, really nice link about the assembly that we can put on our site so people can see who we are. It'll be on Cornell Stat or Cornell Cast on the show Stat Notes, and just another tool for us to kind of humanize us a little. But I'll write a template out in the coming days and get it to everybody so we can all think about what we want to say.
We're also working on a bus tour of campus because some people have not seen a lot of places across campus. So Peggy will be giving us a little driving tour of campus.
Is it going to be a double-decker bus? And she's gonna
double-decker bus. But you can heckle her. I mean, she's pretty good at that. Do that, and then we're also going to have Charlie Walcott, who is the chair of the University Assembly, come in and talk with us just informally about being involved in assemblies and in the larger picture and leadership and that sort of thing.
Will we be doing goal setting?
We'll do goal setting, and we'll talk about the committees, and that will probably be mostly the afternoon. So.
I don't know if many of you know Charlie, but Charlie also used to be the dean of the faculty, and he's just a guy who could talk about representing others in a cohesive, like, kind of high-profile way. And he's just got a wonderful style. And I think when I'm around him, I just shut up and listen because he just knows a lot. He's been here a lot. But he's a very giving person.
Just a thought. Has anyone thought about what we're going to do for food that day?
At the TACCON Center, if we have anything brought in, it has to be from Cornell Catering. So we'll bring in from Cornell Catering, probably. Okay. Unless you have any...
Well, I'm kind of related to that. I was thinking, I don't know when our next newsletter is due out, or if we're going to do one, but it'd be nice to know in the summer what's actually open on campus.
It's on the website. It's on the Cornell
Manning
website.
It is? It's just...
Everything about it. Right. You mean dining or just
dining that campus life? We could point to that in the newsletter. Yeah.
That would be awesome. Because it's kind of hard to find food during the summer. For staff.
Yeah. Probably if you have dietary restrictions for the retreat.
Yeah. And I'll send out an email with all of that. But we'll probably just do like sandwich kind of stuff. But that's kind of the main plan for the tree. But if anybody has anything else that they think we should add or try to do, let me know.
Oh,
well,
that's good. Right. Down the hall.
In the chair, massage, masseuse.
Let's see if we have that in the budget. Let's ask Gemma.
So 9 to 3, right?
9 to 3, yeah. Anybody have anything else? New business, old business, what's going to have my opinion?
Yes, I would like to give my trustee report. I finally have one. I can do it very quickly, but this past week were the trustee meetings for Memorial Day weekend, and I'd like to just share with you what I can share with you. As some of it you've already heard today, but... in the Buildings and Properties Committee, there's some concern about state funding. the budget's not, New York State budget isn't approved yet. And so that's causing just a little bit of concern for people at the university, both on the building side and on the regular state budget side. And I don't know anything more than that. There was a lot of time spent talking about the bridges. A lot, in every single meeting, everyone was talking about the bridges. And the general consensus is that those bridges need to have permanent barriers. And so the university is open to finding a beautiful solution to these iconic structures. There are 7 bridges, and each one will probably have something different done to it, but they're pretty serious about it, and it's a long-term solution. There's probably going to be an interim solution to get the fences off, because those are really horrible looking. So the next thing that you see going up on the bridges will probably be a middle solution and not the end solution. We found that the foundry, which is the building on the other side of the architecture school, was closed. There was some sort of water problem with some sort of landslide going on. The town did not condemn the building. The university did, and it may or may not open up.
Is that building supposed to be removed?
I'm on the incident response team, so let me just touch on it. They didn't condemn it.
No.
It's not condemned. No, it's going to be a few weeks until anyone can get in there. There's going to have to be this temporary stabilization on the gorge itself. They put these pilings in. I don't know if any of you saw that work. It was going on Hoy Road during last year, whatever. It was closed for a while. They put these things in there to support the gorge. And the foundry, of course, is on the historic registry, so it's got some importance to it in terms of the community. And, of course, it was a real sticking point with the Milstein so it'll be, there won't be anybody in there for a while, but it should be back up in business in mid-August. The other thing I want to say about the bridges and the fences, tonight we're going down to Common Council to get an extension for the fences for another 8 weeks until the next iteration of what that's going to look like comes up. But the city's involved in this, which makes it a really dicey thing. So we own 4 of the bridges and they own 3 of them. And it's been an interesting collaboration.
It has. And the senior staff, Susan Murphy's been down at the town meetings, and
yep.
So it's a big deal. It's a big town deal. The organ is being tuned up. Ooh. There's a brand new organ with a million pipes, thousands of pipes. I don't know how many, but the first concert is on November 21st. But it's open and you can go and look at it in Annabelle Taylor. Physical Sciences Building, the big glass building, is going to start getting occupied in July, believe it or not, in the lower floors. And then in November, the upper floors. All of the building projects that you see on campus are moving along either on schedule, ahead of schedule, or maybe a week behind schedule. Let's see. So that was good. Bridges, yes. To approve the budget, and as Mary had said, there will be raises in the budget. They'll be very small. In the meeting, David Gordon acknowledged that we have 3 big holes right now. And I forgot the third one because I was writing down the first and the second one. One of the big holes is faculty hiring. But one of the other holes is the amount of work that the staff has to pick up with the layoffs. And I just want to point it out to you that he recognizes that. He said it in his letter to the staff, went to the university, and he said it in front of the Board of Trustees. And Mary just said it now. So the next step should be following along, but I think that's something that the EA might want to just,
be thinking about ways that we can help people get rid of work.
It's also interesting that it's brought up in the strategic plan. The role of staff is talked about quite a bit, even outside of the one section that's about staff. And so it'll be interesting to see where they go with it.
And that's, I think, unusual. So if you, the strategic plan document is on the web, like everything else, and the staff is mentioned many, many times in very big bullets. And I think that's unusual for a university strategic plan, and I think you should be very pleased that we're so prominent in there. I think that's all I have for now, but it was kind of an upbeat meeting. We got good news. We're still trying to balance the budget, but in trying to balance the budget, things are looking good. So we're either on the schedule that we had planned with financial investments and things like that, or we're just a smidgen ahead. And so things are, you know, heading in the right direction, and it won't be until, I think, 2 years from now that we have it balanced, because it was a four-year plan, but they're going as planned.
Yeah. When does the trustees meet next?
There are committee meetings in June, and then the next big meeting will be in October.
We'll be here on campus?
Mm-hmm. June is New York City.
Okay. What committees are you on?
I am on the Government Relations Committee, the Buildings and Properties Committee, and the Student Affairs Committee. I am not on the Academic Affairs Committee, so I never get to find out what's going on at the faculty. And I'm not on the Audit Committee, because they won't let me be on the Audit Committee, because it's a conflict of interest to have an employee on the Audit Committee. And I'm not on, and there's a Development Steering Committee that I'm not on, so I'm not that involved with fundraising as much as just about everybody else on board.
And Beth is also on this committee with local trustees, sort of like in a formal group. But how many folks that are on the trustees that live here?
There are about, well, trustees and emeriti.
Right.
There's probably 10 to 13 folks who live in the Ithaca area, Portland area, who can travel. And we'll usually meet at someone's house,
yeah.
Carolyn Newman's house,
yeah.
And just talk about local stuff with Vice President Steve Johnson and Gary and that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Could
your speech come? He did a wonderful job.
I was still, this cough is like never going away, but it was funny because the morning of the speech, I practically lost my voice. And I was just like hydrating like crazy, and luckily I was able to talk by the time the speech came around, but it was very good.
Good job.
Well, Jason, thanks for your chairmanship. Congratulations.
Yeah.
For the time now.
Thank you.
So, motion to adjourn?
Second. Yeah.
Wow, we're back this year. Man, you're fast on that.
Jason bringing a little gender equity to the executive committee too, you know.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.